Well, for those of you who were here last night in the worship service, wasn't it great hearing from those missionaries? Man, I'll tell you what, they are putting their lives on the line, and God's using them. God's using them in a great way. And then Dr. Fish, I mean, you know, just the wisdom that he has and the many years that he served the Lord, just us being able to have him as our keynote speaker is just a wonderful, awesome thing. And God is blessing us.
I was perusing the program for the conference, and I discovered the mission statement of Empower. It really interested me. You want to know what this conference wants to accomplish? Its purpose, what it's designed to achieve. Here's what it says. It says, Empower exists to attract, equip, inspire, and empower a growing number of Christ followers to impact their community and their world for Jesus Christ. We're hoping that's the purpose for which you've come, to make a commitment to impact your community and your world for Jesus Christ. And we're talking about running. Running to win. And I'm going to take the very chapter in which the passage, which is the key passage for this conference, I'm going to take that chapter for my text today. Because Paul, in this entire chapter, talks about running to win. Oh, he uses some different terminology. But he says this. He says, if you run to win, it's costly. I ran track on a scholarship when I was in college at what has become the greatest track university in the United States. You go on that track stadium today and it calls itself the track capital of the world. But nevertheless, I ran. And I know it costs something. You run to win. It keeps you focused. You focus on winning. You focus on the tape. But it's costly. And that's what the Apostle Paul talks about in the chapter from which we get our conference verse. So I want to read, beginning in verse 19, in the ninth chapter of the Corinthian letter. Here is what it says. Thank you. I hear Bibles turning. You know, I think that's sweet music in the ears of God. So I'm glad you bring your Bibles. Or I hear pages in a Bible turning. Paul says in 19 of chapter 9, for though I'm free from all men, I've made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more. To the Jews, I became as a Jew, that I might win Jews. To those who are under the law, as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law, as without law, not being without law toward God, but under law toward Christ, that I might win those who are without law. To the weak, I became as weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. Now, I do this for the sake of the gospel. And I want to be a partaker of this task of sharing the gospel with you. Don't you know that those who run in a race, here's our text. Don't you know that those that run in a race, all of them run, But one receives the prize. There was no gold, silver, and bronze in those days. Only the winner got the wreath or the prize. One receives the prize. Run in such a way that you may obtain it. By the way, I think Paul read the sports page in his day, because he frequently used athletic metaphors in his letters. And here he says, everybody that competes for the prize is temperate in all things. They do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore, here's the way I run. Paul's a runner. Here's the way I run. Not with uncertainty. I have definite objectives in my mind as I run, and I'm running to receive the prize. And I fight. A boxing metaphor. I fight. Not as one who merely shadow boxes or one who beats the air. But I discipline my body. I bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. I'm confident that a lot of you here have heard the story of a truck driver in the city of Los Angeles, California, named Larry Walters. Larry Walters was a young man in his 30s. Every Saturday afternoon, he sat out in his backyard under a shade tree, eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, sitting in a lawn chair, and he had a six-pack by his side. He did this every Saturday. But Larry Walters was not just a run-of-the-mill kind of fellow. He was very innovative, very creative. And one day he decided he'd do something a little bit different. He and a friend secured 45 weather balloons. And they tied those weather balloons onto Larry Walters' lawn chair. Well anchored, by the way. He had an idea, see. He was going to glide up about 150 feet and then sail down his neighborhood, wave at his neighbors while they sat in their lawn chairs, ate their peanut butter sandwiches, drank their six packs. Pepsi Cola. Now, Larry Walters was not an engineer. He was a truck driver. Well, he took a BB gun along just in case he got a little high. He'd puncture a couple of those balloons and would descend to the level that he desired to descend to. Boy, it was an exciting moment when Larry Walters said, "Cut her loose!" And cut her loose they did. Larry Walters didn't ascend to 150 feet. Almost like a rocket, Larry Walters ascended to 11,500 feet. He was holding onto his chair so tightly he was afraid to use his BB gun. A Continental Airlines pilot, true story. Flying a DC-10, said over the intercom, said, "You folks seated on the right side of the plane, look out of the window, you'll see a man seated in a lawn chair." They said to him from the tower, "Land that plane immediately and report." Well, finally, about dusk, enough helium leaked out of those balloons that Larry Walter did descend to terra firma once again. And when he did, he found himself surrounded by lights. Some red lights and some blue lights, but spotlights and television camera lights. And a television reporter broke through the crowd and put a microphone up to Larry Walters' mouth, and he asked him three questions. He said, "Were you scared?" He said, "Yep." He said, "You're going to do it again?" He said, "Nope." And then he asked him, "Why did you do it in the first place? Larry Walter's answer was classic. Well, sir, don't you know that there comes a time in a man's life when he can't just sit there? I smile at that. There comes a time in a person's life when they can't just sit there. But I suggest to you that God is saying something like that to us right here at Green Lake. The time comes in your life when you can't just sit there living in a hurting world, whether it's hurting teenagers in a high school or hurting adults living in an age in which there's so many hurting people. And we know that Jesus is the healing balm for hurting people. The time has come when we can't just sit there. With so many dysfunctional families, we understand that Jesus is the greatest glue for holding marriages together in all of history. The time has come when we can't just sit there. With people lost without a Savior, bound for an everlasting hell. And we know that Jesus came into the world to seek and to save those who are lost. The time has come when we can't just sit there. And I submit to you that that's a part of what the Apostle Paul says in the chapter from which we take our text verse for this conference. He's saying to the church, look, I want to tell you about my own life, and I want to share with you the fact that here's the way it ought to be with you. And what he's saying is that running this race like it ought to be run, it's costly. You don't find success in running. Listen, I know enough about it to know this. You don't find success in running in a bargain basement. It doesn't come with a markdown price tag. Discipline, commitment to the task, and those are things that he's calling us to in a chapter which actually is given over entirely to the subject of the high cost of effective evangelism, or the high cost that we must pay if our lives are to touch other people redemptively, if we are to win them for Jesus Christ. I didn't read it, but I could have. Paul says, listen, I want to tell you what it cost me. He says, first of all, he says, it cost me some privileges. I'm not going to go into these privileges, but he uses the word in my translation, right. But it's the same thing as privilege. Don't we have the privilege to eat and to drink? He's talking about eating meat offered to idols was looked on as compromise. He's talking about drinking wine. He says, don't we have the right, if we want to eat meat and drink wine? Or don't we have the right to take along a believing wife? Other apostles do it. Or don't Barnabas and I have the right to take a salary? But they never did. Hey, Paul was bivocational in the city of Corinth. Did pretty well for a bivocational pastor. But he says, these were rights of mine. These were privileges. But I gave up these privileges. He says it's going to cost you some privileges. I was preaching in Denver, Colorado. And in those days, and I get in very few churches today where we have platform furniture, you know, where you sit on the platform, you sit down here with the rest of the folks and you walk up. But nevertheless, in those days, this is a few years ago, they still had platform furniture. And behind me in the choir, every single night in a meeting, and this was a six-day meeting, behind me sat a beautiful 17-year-old girl. Now, I didn't lose my eyesight when I became a Christian. I just got it sanctified, that's all. And I know she was pretty. I know what pretty is. She was pretty. And I asked the pastor about her. I said, "Pastor, tell me about this girl. She sits behind me every night in the choir." "Oh," he said, "let me tell you about her." Said, "She's a senior in high school. She's a cheerleader." He said, "Monday, she went to the sponsor of the pep squad, and she went to her cheerleading colleagues, and she said to them," she said, "I'm sorry, but I won't be at the game." This was the last game of the season. The meeting was in November. She said, "I'm sorry, but I won't be at the game Friday night to help you lead the yells." She said, "I am a follower of Jesus Christ. And my church is in a series of meetings. And I have prayed it through. And I believe that God wants me in my church. You can impose whatever penalty on me you want to, but I won't be at the game Friday night to cheer the team on." Now, I don't know what you think about that. Maybe somebody says, "Fanatic." You know, I usually find a fanatic just somebody who loves Jesus more than I do. But I don't know what you think about that. But I want to tell you, there were a group of fellows and girls in the largest high school in Denver who thought this. You know, if it means that much to her to be a Christian, there might be something to it. I believe I'll look into it. Our world is never attracted by an anemic kind of commitment. It'll cost you to run this race like you ought to win, like you ought to run to win. It will cost you. It will cost you your privileges. But Paul goes on. He says it will also cost you your prejudices. Now, I think some of you are saying, "Well, Roy, look, you're talking to a group of Christians from Minnesota, Wisconsin. You're not talking about people from Mississippi and Louisiana. We don't have prejudices." Ah, friend. Well, there are, first place, a lot of other kind of prejudices other than just racial prejudice. I bless God that most of us have gotten over that. We probably have a half dozen races represented here at Empower this year. But there are other kind of prejudices. I was with a pastor not long ago, and he said, "Roy, could I confess something to you?" He said, "I want to confess that I have a prejudice against trying to win wealthy people to Jesus Christ." Now, I know our denomination, if you're a Southern Baptist, I know our denomination pretty well. We're glad to witness to wealthy people today. It goes the other way with us. It's not the immensely wealthy, it's the grossly poor. You see, what we forget is before World War II, we Southern Baptists were they. And now we leave them to the Pentecostals. You're supposed to laugh at that point. Maybe you don't think it's funny. But we have our prejudices. I like to ask pastors, "Have you ever tried to win a homosexual to Jesus Christ?" Well, I'll tell you, it gets very quiet in an auditorium when you ask that question. Or what about, you know, our prejudices, they run more toward the shady ladies of our cities. Those folks who live on the other side of the track. Morally. I asked them, "When's the last time you ever won a publican to Jesus?" The tax collector. You say, "We don't have publicans today like they did then." Do you know what a 21st century publican is? A liquor dealer. Yeah, I'm not talking about somebody that just runs a convenience store now and sells a little beer. I'm talking about a man who does nothing but sell the real stuff. "Hey, Pastor,
You ever tried to win a liquor dealer to Jesus? Do you realize that Paul takes about 6 verses in this passage to talk about giving up his prejudices to win people to Jesus Christ? There was never a more prejudiced race of people in all of history than God's ancient people, Israel. Religiously prejudiced, socially prejudiced, morally prejudiced. But Paul says, I brought my prejudices and I laid them at the foot of the cross. He says, I become all things to all men that I might by all means win some. But it's going to cost you your prejudices. There's some fellow girl, I'm looking at some young people. I think the light's up here so bright. It's hard to see, but I think I'm looking at some young people. Tell me. There's somebody on your campus that's neglected by virtually everybody there. They may be a little strange. And maybe, you know, people think some justifiable reason for me to sort of shun this person. I want to ask you, are you willing to share the good news of Jesus with that person? Get your prejudices out of the way. And don't you tell me you don't have any prejudices. Not one of us here. Listen, I remember the day that I prided myself on the fact that I was not a prejudiced person. Now, in the first place, you better watch it when you start priding yourself about anything. But, oh, I was proud I was not a prejudiced person. Listen, I'm going to take you back before the birthday of most of you here. But some of you adults will remember this. I'm going to take you back to the hippie culture. The late 60s, the early 70s. I didn't mind the bare feet. I didn't mind the old Volkswagen vans. I didn't mind the smelly t-shirts. I didn't mind the holy blue jeans. But I want to tell you, when I saw somebody of the male gender with hair down to here, I had a tremendous inner agitation. I mean, with me, friend, Jesus saves and shaves, and that's the way it was. And one morning, 5 o'clock, I didn't even know there was such an hour on the clock, but I had to get up to catch a plane. I was in Memphis, and I had to get back to school to teach a class, so I was out in the terminal shortly after 5. There were 3 of us. And those 2, male gender, had hair down to here. Well, I got as far away as I could. Lord, I thank you. I'm not as other men. And I had an unexpected visit from Jesus. He gets up early too. He said, my child, he said, do you think I love those 2 fellows over there? Yes, Lord. I know you love them too. He said, listen, my child. If I love them, you had better love them as well. And listen, I believe what probably was as quick a cure of hippie detestation that ever took place in history took place in that air terminal as he took my heart and opened it up and made it big enough to take them in.
But you have to watch prejudice. It doesn't send a calling card. It comes sneaking up on your blind side. But you find one of the greatest words ever spoken about prejudice. In fact, you'll never find anything equal to it in the literature of any culture, where Paul says, I brought my prejudices and I gave them to Jesus Christ. And I gave it all up. It'll cost you. It'll cost you your prejudices. Now, finally, you want to run to win. It's costly. It's going to cost you your luxuries. You say, well, boy, you missed me there. You sit back a little smug now. Let me preach to the others. Oh, but listen, I'm not talking about the luxury of driving a Rolls Royce automobile. Or I'm not talking about the luxury of living in a $5 million house. Paul says, I gave up luxuries. He says, first of all, I gave up the luxury of majoring on minors in my ministry. I preach some years. I get into 35 to 40 churches. I've never ever told that to the president of the institution where I teach, but nevertheless, there are years that I get into that many churches. And I know Southern Baptists pretty well. And I know most of our churches have a tremendous amount of excess baggage. And most of our churches are not majoring on majors. We're giving first-rate loyalties to second-rate causes. Why did Jesus put His church here? Well, I know there are concomitant reasons, but don't ever forget this. He put His church here that we might reach out with the good news and win people to Him as a Savior and Lord. That's first. Make disciples of all nations. Go into all the world, preach the gospel to every person. That's why He put His church here. But second, after they're saved, we're to mature them. We're to help them to grow. We're to help them to become more like Christ. Now, friend, I know that most of our churches are not majoring on this. Let me tell you how I know that. I know that because I just look at statistics and see that last year, it took over 40 of us, 40 Southern Baptists, to win one person to Jesus Christ and to an open confession of faith in Him. 40 of us. You can't tell me we're majoring on winning people to Jesus when, let's say, out of this group here, there would only be maybe 8 people who won somebody else to Jesus Christ. With a baptismal ratio of 1 for 44, we're not majoring on majors. And hear me. Out of those who are won to Christ and come into our churches, do you realize what a poor job we do of keeping them and maturing them and leading them to Christ likeness? I don't think it's true in Minnesota, Wisconsin. You're a fairly new state. I was pastor in Ohio for 3 years. And I know what it's like to be a pastor outside of the bounds of the old traditional Southern Baptist Convention. So this may not be as true up here as it is down where I come from. But in the church of which I'm a pastor, we have 10 people join the church next Sunday. Next year, we won't be able to find 5 of them. We have a dropout rate of over 50%. You can't tell me that we're discipling people. Don't tell me we're maturing people when only 47.5% of our people ever even attend the service. If I stayed up here 10 more minutes, you really better watch it. Paul says, God didn't give me that privilege of majoring on minors. Here's the way he said it. He said it in the words of our text. He said, run to win. Friend, you can't lollygag along in a 400-meter race and expect to beat anybody. You concentrate on winning. You major on the majors. And that's what Paul says I did. You run to win. You run to get the prize. You go for the gold. He said something else. This is the last thing I'll say. He said, it's going to cost you the luxury of being soft on yourself. And I want to assure you I'm preaching to Roy Fish at this point. I really don't like some of the things he says here. Listen to it. He says, I discipline my body. He says, I'm a fighter. I'm fighting the devil. I'm not just beating the air. But in so doing, I beat my own bodies. He didn't literally do that. But he says, I discipline my body. I bring my body into subjection. Tell me, who controls you? You, your spiritual man, who controls the appetites? Your appetites control you. Do you control them? Your desires, do you boss them? Or do they boss you? Paul says it's going to cost you a luxury. That's luxury of being soft on yourself. I discipline my body. He says, if I'm not careful, even I, the Apostle Paul, someday God might have to put me on the shelf and say, I can't use you like I once used you because you didn't discipline your body. You didn't take care to live a clean Christian life. It costs something to win. And that's what Paul is talking about in this chapter. If you don't believe it, just look at those verses 19 through 22 five times. He says, what I'm doing it to win. I'm doing it to win. To win people. He focused on winning people. You run to win, you're focusing on winning people. I did it to win them. To win, to win, to win, to win. And if you wonder what he meant by win, he leaves us no doubt when he says, I do this that I might by all means save some. I want to get people saved. That's what he's saying. Hey, Jesus never promised you a rose garden. He didn't say you're going to be taken to the skies on flowery beds of ease. You'll be the follower of Jesus Christ. You ought to be, I want to tell you, it'll be more thrilling than you ever dreamed. It'll cost you something. But life will take on an exuberance. And you will find thrill and excitement in your walk with Jesus Christ that a lot of you here have not yet found. And I love those words that come from a young man who gave himself a martyr for the cause of Jesus Christ before he ever reached the age of 30. He said it so well. He is no fool. She is no fool. They are not fools who give up that which they cannot keep in order to gain that which they cannot lose. Let's run to win.